Chapter 9. Thy Goods. Summary. Davy struggles with some basic arithmetic. When you're working with panic disorder, there are two key enemies for you to confront, the fear and the powerlessness. Panic attacks are terrifying, so it is perfectly reasonable for someone to fear them. They also come about unbidden, like a completely uncontrollable force. So again, it's perfectly reasonable for someone to feel powerless against them. Fear and powerlessness, when you give in to them, that's you letting the panic win. Dismantle the fear. A panic attack is a neurological process, so teach yourself everything you can about how that neurological process occurs. It feels like you're dying during a panic attack, but you know that's not true. Acknowledge reality. You've survived them just fine plenty of times before, and this one is not going to be any different. As much as you can, try to imagine yourself as separate from all the sensations of panic. Do what you can to map the phenomenology of the attack to what you know of the background neurology. You are stronger than you think. Believe it. Earn control. Start by keeping a careful log. Every time you feel the panic rising, make note of it. Record what it felt like. Rate the severity. Jot down as much as you can about where you were, what you were thinking, what you were doing, and anything else that stands out in your memory. Turn your panic into a science project. Look for patterns, identify triggers, come up with a plan to avoid those triggers, at least for now. Practice relaxation techniques, and plan out ahead of time how you'll use those relaxation techniques when you notice the panic rising. Be specific as much as possible. You know what self-care looks like. Practice it. It's all rote, easy to spell out, hard to implement. No matter how well you understand it, no matter how many times you've helped someone else combat their own panic disorder, you shouldn't try to go through it alone. Therapy isn't some sort of college seminar where all you're trying to do is gather up knowledge. If you've got panic disorder, you deserve to have a therapist by your side, coming along with you through the battle. Anyway, another thing you shouldn't do is self-diagnose. Sure, but Davy didn't actually have panic disorder. He might be having some panic attacks, but there's more to panic disorder than that. And, also, he was going to manage just fine on his own. I was hoping, perhaps, we might discuss the symposium. And there you go. With that, Davy won a bet he'd made with himself.
Well, sure,
Davy said. The details of the bet were simple. A bag of M&Ms on Aziraphale at some point, bringing up the symposium. So here was Davy, now looking forward to getting a sweet treat later this afternoon.
I'm familiar, but I'm afraid I don't recollect too many of the details.
That was intentional, actually. He figured the more he could comment on the contents of the symposium, the easier it would be for Aziraphale to drag him into some sort of philosophical tangent. Keeping his recollections as limited as possible, he thought, might make it easier for them to stay on topic. Davy got things started.
What brings it to mind?
It's a remarkable achievement, is it not? Aziraphale spoke with the simple enthusiasm that came so easily to him, in terms of theory, rhetoric, even drama. Astounding!
I'd have to agree.
More or less. When Davy had read the symposium, way back when, he'd been too distracted by the references to gay sex, the first non-stigmatized ones he'd ever encountered, to pick up on any of Plato's theorizing. That didn't matter, though, because the Platonic dialogue's cultural merit was actually irrelevant to their current purpose, and they both knew it. Davy gave Aziraphale a look.
But that's not what brings it to mind.
Another thing they both knew was that Aziraphale didn't feel trapped by being called out like that. He played at it, of course, putting on a scowl and dropping his voice, but he wasn't actually distressed. It was exactly what he had been expecting.
It's the subject matter, as you well know.
Yes, they both knew. Davy thought they could go a bit further, though, so he kept quiet and nodded to show he was waiting. Aziraphale relented.
Agape, philia, storge, human love, in all its forms.
If you wanted to interpret Aziraphale, you had to focus less on what he said and more on what he expected you to recognize had been left unsaid. Davy registered the emphasis on human love, and he wondered if he was supposed to notice the omission of the angelic counterpart. Davy was familiar with the concept of agape, at least in a Christian context, but he didn't know what storge meant, and he had to rely on inference for philia. His understanding of Greek was extremely limited. Regardless, he could acknowledge the significance of Aziraphale putting name to the topic, even if he was unsure about how best to read into the names he had listed for it. Davy was satisfied. "Why don't you tell me about it?"
"Actually..." The play act was over. Now there was a small frisson to how Aziraphale spoke. He was getting near to nervous. "I was hoping you would. Could you?"
An actual, stated request from Aziraphale was an important thing to honor, but Davy didn't actually understand.
"Hmm? Human love."
This wasn't a passing attempt at steering the conversation. Aziraphale was serious about this.
"Could you tell me about it?"
"Well, sure," Davy said, as he reckoned with the request. They had established that, out of the two of them, Aziraphale was the one who knew the symposium, which was perhaps the most central exploration of the nature of love within European history. And furthermore, there was no way that an angel with thousands of years of experience among humans would need the half-baked ramblings of an old fart like Davy to make sense of things. Again, interpretation required focus. Out of everything Aziraphale wasn't saying, what had been left out intentionally?
"What do you want to know?"
"Well," Aziraphale faltered, because whatever it was he needed, it wasn't answers to specific questions.
"We don't have human love. In heaven, I mean."
It was challenging every time that place got brought up. It rarely happened, though, and Davy pushed past the feeling.
"You've got a different kind of love up there."
"Oh, certainly. That's heaven for you, all right."
Aziraphale blinked from dispelling tension, just bursting with all that infinite divine love. Along with what Aziraphale didn't say, it was also a good idea to focus on what he said just a bit too much.
"Huh," Davy said.
As much as it would be nice to get some straightforward answers to some simple questions, Davy wasn't going to try prying out more direct communication from Aziraphale right now. It wouldn't be the right move, given how Aziraphale had been directing the discussion. Also, it would be miserable, and Davy had his limits. He took to musing.
"Well, that's one pretty big difference between the divine and the human, I suppose. Human love's got to be finite."
Aziraphale absolutely did not like that. He as good as recoiled.
"No, that can't be right."
"No?"
Davy wasn't here to debate. He acknowledged Aziraphale's reaction, and then he risked the observation,
"That's upsetting for you."
Denying it would be the easy response. Brave, infinitely strong Aziraphale sat with the chance to impulsively reject his feelings, and then he broke against it. He held, gingerly, at the potential to be true to himself. He glanced off to the side, and he took the time to swallow before responding.
"The certainty of death, surely, is always upsetting."
Was it, for him? The fact that Aziraphale was lying didn't change that he was also, tremendously, attempting at the truth.
"Yeah, I suppose it is," Davy spoke, low and chill, to provide grist for whatever mill was working away in Aziraphale's head. "But that's what makes human lives meaningful. Well, so I've heard said. It's the fact that we've got a beginning and an end that makes the middle parts matter."
"How very existentialist of you."
That sounded dismissive, but it wasn't. And even if it had been dismissive, Davy couldn't say it wouldn't be earned. What mortal didn't deserve to be dismissed for spitting out nonsense about the meaning of life to an angel of the Lord? But the tone wasn't intentional. It was mere byproduct. Aziraphale was working hard to feel at something important. Davy wasn't going to interfere. "It's just what you hear sometimes."
I
have to insist that that cannot be the totality of it.
Aziraphale wasn't one to insist often, was he? He was still thoughtful, focused far more on his own internality than anything exterior.
There must be more to human love than merely that it doesn't last.
It wasn't fair that Aziraphale could say something so heart-wrenching as if it were mere abstract theory.
I suppose you're right, Davy said, and he felt heavy.
It wasn't hard for Davy to see how his love for his family, for Sadie, no matter what, and for their children, was finite. He'd been raised to understand that the love God had for humans outstripped whatever it was a creature like Davy could possibly instantiate. He was as comfortable with the inevitability of death as anyone nearing the age of retirement could be, he supposed. But there was a difference between saying love was finite and saying that it didn't last. There was something awful about that idea, or there was something internal to Davy that cried out to reject it. If there was an afterlife, as surely there must be, and if Davy someday would be part of that afterlife, then something of Davy must be everlasting, and if all that was true, and surely it was, then this meant that Davy's love for Sadie and his babies must be everlasting as well, because what could there possibly be to Davy except for that? He couldn't sit here the way he needed to, with Aziraphale's experience centralized, if his mind kept circling around this kind of thought. He cleared his throat. Besides, for Aziraphale's sake, they really should dedicate some time to processing through the fact that Aziraphale had made an explicit request.
"I'm wondering about something," Davy said, pulling Aziraphale from his inscrutable thoughts, recentering their attention. "What was it like for you just then, when you asked to talk about the symposium?"
That was fine. Serviceable, for how they could move forward. Probably even the right therapeutic move to make, even if for the wrong reasons. The precocious mathematician may find himself in want of the occasional word problem. Suppose that you currently have $20 in your pocket, 2 5s and a 10. Suppose, further, that during your drive to work, there are 3 corners where you are almost certain to pass a hungry, unhoused, desperate beggar. What do you do? Do you stop for the first one and open your wallet and pull out a 5 for him, or the 10? Do you try to hide your wallet from his view so he can't see which choice you make? Do you honestly think you're worthy of deciding he gets only 5? What makes you think you're better than him? Do you look him in the eye, the way he deserves, or are you going to be self-indulgent and shameful and keep your eyes down? His feet are covered in rags while your shoes are sturdy. Do you take them off? Do you? You didn't, did you? A camel through the eye of a needle? It's a mistranslation, and you know that. And is that the excuse you'll bring with you when you meet your maker? Is it? Are you satisfied? Are you proud? Are you pleased with how special and worthy you are because you asked at the bank for 2 5s and a 10 rather than a single 20? Never mind you could have gotten 3 20s. Never mind you actually have far more than even that. And there was nothing stopping you, was there? Huh? Was anything stopping you? Anything, anything at all? Do you have any excuse? Or are you really such a cheap, selfish, greedy, vicious, petty, mean, bilious piece of... It is a simple matter of mathematics. Under the specified conditions, what is the total amount of time that you sit, with the engine running, in the parking lot outside your office building, before you can manage to move again? For full credit, do make sure to show all your work. Davy's Coke Zero fizzed. Otherwise, the kitchen was quiet.
"Say, what kind of music do you like?" Davy asked.
"Not ska." Aubrey smiled. She was friendly.
"Sure," Davy chuckled, because he was okay. "That's what everyone says before they know better."
"I guess I don't listen to much music."
"Really?"
Aubrey shrugged. Davy couldn't say why that made him want to cry. He finished off the Coke Zero in his office. An angel of the Lord sat across from Davy, and Davy was a fraying end.
If you're amenable—"
Davy wasn't thinking this through. His thoughts just clicked into place. He rubbed the back of one hand with the other. "Would you be up for going on something of a field trip today?"
"A field trip?" Of course Aziraphale would be amenable. He loved getting to try out new things.
"I thought, or I'm thinking, there's something I'd like to talk with you about,"
Davy half explained,
"and I thought it'd be easier if I could show you."
Aziraphale, of course, was intrigued.
"Well, certainly."
Davy really checked. "You don't mind?"
Aziraphale smiled. Kind, compassionate, simple and easy.
"Why would I?"
That was a good point. Davy accepted it. He and this angel of the Lord were going to go on a field trip, just as he had requested. He pulled himself out of his seat, and he led the way. They had to drive to get where Davy wanted to go. He made sure to turn off the stereo before the CD of his band's practice could start playing. But he hadn't thought, ahead of time, about what it would feel like to have an angel of the Lord in the passenger seat of his Subaru Forester. Aziraphale really liked the seatbelts. Davy parked so they were catty-cornered to what he actually cared about. This was the sort of semi-industrial intersection that never got paid any mind. They could likely stay parked here all day, and no one would notice or care. Maybe not even the man they had come to see, whose screaming they could hear, even with the windows rolled up. He was dirty, just so incredibly dirty. His hair was matted to his scalp. His feet, visible through his worn shoes, were caked with all things unhealthy. His posture was unsteady. He jerked and twitched. His face, broken in many different ways, was contorted. He was enraged. He was raging, deeply and loudly, screaming profanities and insults and curses, running ragged his own vocal cords, indiscriminately. Davy had brought them here so they could gawk at him, this human soul suffering to the point of his own annihilation. Add that to Davy's list of sins.
"I've been racking my brain," Davy said, "trying to figure out if I should ask you to heal this fellow."
Aziraphale was smart. He knew well enough to hear what Davy wasn't saying. Davy had made no request of him.
"He's sick," Davy continued, when he thought he knew how. "We can both see that. I mean, I've also been thinking about the Gadarene demoniac. With the pigs, you know? I don't know. But I see this fellow, and I know he's sick."
"Yes, he is." It was harder than Davy had expected, hearing an angel of the Lord's voice go so soft from sympathy. There was a release of sorts that came from knowing Aziraphale was offering him the grace to give voice to his thoughts. But release wasn't what he was searching for. Davy felt raw in all the places where he wanted, achingly, to be at peace.
"And it's wrong, it's just so wrong," Davy said, "to ask a favor like that from you. I can't wrap my head around it, what it must feel like. And I'm sorry, I really am, but here we are. I brought us here because of him. But I also think, well, what if I did ask, and you did it? What then? He's still out here. He's still hungry and cold. These conditions themselves, being unhoused, you know, that's enough to bring on psychosis. It can be. What he needs is more, so much more. He needs housing, first and foremost. And then there's also, how many others out there? This is just one person, and you must..."
He was rambling. He was unsorted. His eyes were stinging. He couldn't sum it all up to a clear point, and he had to accept that's how it was going to be.
"I guess I wish I knew what would be the right thing to do."
Aziraphale watched the man through the window, and then he said,
"There must be authorities who can help."
There were, yes. Davy knew all about them.
"I could call the police," he said, "and I could end up with him shot and killed, you know. If not that, he might attack them, and why wouldn't he? He'd be scared. And if that happened, he'd ended up arrested and in jail. Nah, if he's real lucky, he'd end up hospitalized. I don't know if you know anything about that, but a 72 hold in a psych unit ain't a kindness, especially not when you end up right back on the street afterwards, the way that he would."
"I see."
It was relieving how Aziraphale invited quietude.
Who knows, though? Davy certainly didn't. Maybe it'd actually work out. Maybe. But you can't know, can you? And who am I to decide for him what risks are acceptable? It's not my life I'd be gambling with now, is it?
They both watched as the sick man screamed at a passing car.
"You're a very kind man, Dr. Hampson," Aziraphale said at length. He was apologetic. "However, I am afraid your perspective is a bit narrow.
When an angel speaks, you listen.
That man is ill, just as you say, but the nature of his affliction is significant. You see, in this state, he cannot be held responsible for his actions. His soul remains untarnished, no matter what he might do. And so, as long as he stays as he is firmly secured for heaven's side. Were he to be healed, on the other hand, his capacity for choice would be restored, and thus he might stray. So, you see, from a, shall we say, more cosmic perspective, healing him would be at best a waste of a miracle for a triviality. At worst, it would be counterproductive."
What a cool, easy logic. It was like a brick.
"You're telling me his suffering doesn't matter?"
"No, Dr. Hampson, that is not what I'm telling you.
Because," Davy almost forgot, "when this angel spoke, you listened to what he didn't say."
"I'm sorry, Aziraphale."
"Oh, you shouldn't be."
Aziraphale turned and gave him a smile, small and forgiving. Then he turned his attention back, out the window.
"It is a shame, isn't it, that there is not a single bit that you could do to help him?"
No, that wasn't true. Davy would turn into acid if he didn't acknowledge it. No matter how great the need, no matter how dire the circumstances, there was always something that could be done to help. Maybe not heal, but always, at least, to help. He felt awkward. He couldn't not. Give me a minute. Aziraphale was patient. He was content to wait in the car while Davy got out. Davy had $24 in his wallet today. He had granola bars and bottled water stored behind the driver's seat. It was meager, almost embarrassing, but it was what Davy had to give. Once the man saw Davy approaching, he looked confused, but he also calmed. It always made a difference to a person to be treated as such. If anything mattered, maybe, then that did. Aziraphale watched. Davy tried not to pay attention to that. Once Davy was back, putting on his seatbelt again, Aziraphale looked at him. He spoke, so full of satisfaction and pride.
"That was a very good thing you just did."
Davy couldn't think of anything to say to that. Aziraphale watched the world go by as Davy drove.
"I like getting to heal people," Aziraphale said. "I wish I could more often."
"You can?"
Aziraphale sighed. They drove in silence for a while.
"Quite a bit is precarious, you know," Aziraphale said.
No, Davy didn't know.
"If only..."
Aziraphale started, but then he didn't finish the thought.
"Well, best not to dwell on what cannot be changed."
Davy risked a glance over before he returned his attention to the road.
"And let's not forget all those poor pigs drowning like that,"
Aziraphale said, transported sadly.
"Such a terrible waste that was."
Davy parked, and he turned off the engine. He was ready to get out, but he felt first he had to say something. He was guilty, dragging Aziraphale around like this. He was about to apologize, but he didn't get the chance.
"Well, hats off to you, Dr. Hampson."
Aziraphale's eyes gleamed, bright and contented.
"That was quite the rousing demonstration of human love, and I thank you for it."
"Well, that wasn't expected." Davy put on a smile, though he struggled to respond.